Hello, and welcome to the 90s Kids Movie Pod. We are your hosts, Joe.
Hello.
Stephanie.
Hello.
And I'm Max. We are three millennials who took A-level media studies, so you know we are highly qualified to talk about films. This is the podcast for children of the 90s. Join us as we rewatch the films that shaped our childhood. Hi, guys, and welcome back to this week's podcast. Can I just say that it's ice to meet you both again?
Oh, no, he didn't.
And with that introduction, I'll let Mr. Joe Lamond introduce the film that we are going to be talking about this week.
Right, so, disclaimer, I know this film is bad. That's part of its charm. This week's film is, of course, Batman and Robin, the 1997 Hollywood failure that is the fourth Batman film in the kind of early 90s saga. It started off very well, this four-part Batman epic. It was, in the 90s. I think the first one was it 89 or something? It was Tim Burton. It was great. Second one, Tim Burton again. Third one, Joel Schumacher. Surprise hit. And then this is the fourth installment, still by Joel Schumacher, Batman and Robin.
I mean, this...
Not
this...
Batman and Robert.
Yeah.
I thought we were watching Batman and Robert.
Did you watch Batman and Robert? Because that's a different film.
That's the porn version.
I had to pay
version.
Extra to see that. Yeah, it wasn't worth it. Arnold Schwarzenegger was still in it, though, oddly enough. And he had the exact same dialogue.
Joe, if you were to explain the plot to someone who had never heard of Batman before...
Right, okay, so...
How would you do that?
Well, it starts off... I mean, the history of Batman is something I won't go into too much because hopefully people have seen it, especially because this is the fourth film and we've actually had, like, you know, more popular Batman films since that, like the Dark Knight trilogy and all that kind of stuff. So, in this film, it's already established that Batman has Robin, and basically Robin has turned into Bart Simpson and he's the annoying sidekick to Batman, George Clooney's Batman, and you know, it's like, oh, what's it going to be about this time? Who's the classic villain this time? Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze, and is freezing the whole city. Uma Thurman gets turned into Poison Ivy. They team up. They always team up. Classic. And it turns out that this is a challenge that Robin and Batman and their little butler, they can't hack themselves. So they get a schoolgirl to help them.
I think...
And they... Spoiler alert, they win.
No, I wouldn't have guessed that. I would not have guessed that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Steph has already confessed that she didn't exactly see the entire film... Mostly because
just
of
throw me
how
under
bad
the bus. I was going to pretend that I've watched it all.
No, we're going to. I think any listener, our one listener, will appreciate the full honesty of this podcast. Yeah.
Like she missed. Yeah. She missed all of the ending when Bruce Willis came in and Samuel L. Jackson made a cameo appearance. She missed it all,
damn,
didn't she? But
oh. Yeah, she didn't even see the post credit scenes. You didn't miss much, Steph. This film, spoiler alert, is not a good film. The reason I picked this one, I must say, out of the whole, the four films that I could have picked, is that this came out in 97 and it was the one that I saw the most as a kid growing up. We grew up in a time where Batman was really popular and like there was cartoons and there was toys and there was bed sheets and there was the whole shebang for Batman. And this was kind of the end of that. In a sad way, because this, I think, after this film came out, and it was actually a surprise failure, which is shocking if anyone has seen the film. but yeah, they had to basically shelve Batman for years until they let
Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, it was almost as if they wanted to pretend that it didn't happen.
Yeah, and I know that Steph feels like she wished it never happened, having seen half the film.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, what did you make of it, Steph, of what you watched? And again,
because you hadn't seen this before, had you, Steph? Like, it's not as if you didn't watch the end of this time. You've still never seen the end of this film.
Yeah, I still have no idea how this film ends. No, I don't ever remember watching this in the 90s as a child. I don't remember. I mean, I've seen loads of clips from it. I've seen basically all the Arnold Schwarzenegger lines from this, because they are classic. It's a kid's movie, isn't it? Which I guess, like, most of the films that we are reviewing on this podcast are kids' films, because we were kids in the 90s. But for saying it's Batman and Robin, and, like, thinking about Batman now, when you watch it, you're like, this film is aimed at children. It reminded me of, like, a Power Rangers, like, TV show. Like, the villains, or the, like, henchmen and the set, it all looked like something from like Power Rangers or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like
I was, because we watched Casper in the previous podcast, I was getting a bit like Casper, like the slapstick elements of Casper were better done than Batman and Robin. It was crazy
It's like they went over the top, but too over the top. And you can't even say it was like a low budget film. They really did spend a lot of money on the sets. I'm not saying they looked incredible, but I mean, they spent a lot of money on the actors, on the sets. They did it with the intention to make this movie a success, but I think I don't know. The plot was, I wouldn't say the plot was the worst. I have to admit something. So when you announced this movie last week, I remember thinking to myself, I don't know which one you actually meant. And then when I started watching this film, I remembered that me and my brother used to have this on video, and we used to watch it all the time. I have to admit, it is one of those films where, as a kid, I thought it was one of the coolest films I'd ever watched.
So did I.
I realised that.
Look, Steph said it is aimed at children, and when you're a kid, what you think is cool may not necessarily make up a good film.
Yeah.
I found that this was, it gets worse the more you rewatch it.
Yeah, it really does. And I think even Uma Thurman's character, I thought her character was really, really good, but that character couldn't save the film. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger's role dominates the film.
It does.
Yeah, I had stopped counting the amount of ice puns.
They did well to come up with them all.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. They did.
See, he was like the top billed actor for this film, wasn't he? Mm. He was ahead of the person, George Clooney, that played Batman. He was like, it's clear that this is basically almost like a Mr. Freeze film, and Batman and Robin are in it as well. So you had seen it before, Max, and would you say that it's definitely worse as an adult watching it?
I think it's worse as an adult, but it reminded me why I liked it. Like there were scenes such as the motorbike scene with Alicia Silverstone. I remember watching that and thinking it was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
however, it's not. I don't even think it was the coolest thing by 1997 standards, but I just remember thinking to myself, this action is like up there. It's just top quality.
I think this film is definitely a product of some of the really bad CGI that we saw in the 90s films. Like we talked last week about Casper, about how they used it only like quite minimally, just for like the ghosts and stuff, and there's lots of practical effects. Whereas this, it did rely, there were some scenes where you thought, hang on, what video game is this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I want to return it.
I know. I think the ice effects got really tired really quickly. Like after the first 5-10 minutes, anytime it came on screen, I was just like, oh please, this is just so bad. But I remember, you know, when I was, you know, 7-year-old Max, I probably thought that it was really, really cool. And the concept of freezing
people. You
don't
know any better, do you?
No, exactly. No. I think the simple concept of like freezing people and then unfreezing people was just like so cool to me. But yeah, I think also that I remember thinking that Robin was really
really quite lame when I was younger. I don't know why. I just didn't. Mm. I wasn't drawn to him. I thought Batwoman, sorry, and Batman were the cool people. And Robin, anytime he's on screen,
she's Batgirl, isn't she?
Is she?
She Batgirl.
I'm gonna say I think she's Batgirl.
Is she? Okay.
Well, maybe she's Batgirl, but she turns into Batwoman, but you wouldn't know because you've only seen half the thing. It's 10 years later.
I mean, interestingly enough, what I did is when I was looking at other films that came out around the time, because I thought to myself, okay, I don't think this is a great film, but to compare it to something that came out in the same year, I did Google like 1997 action movies. And one of the films that came out in 1997, either just before or just after, was Men in Black. And I thought that was an interesting...
Love Men in Black.
Yeah, me too. And I thought that was an interesting comparison.
Yeah, Men in Black is a fantastic film and probably something that we should have later on in this podcast because it's definitely nostalgic. It's
I watch that film a lot.
This day.
Do you?
Yeah. It's a great film.
Yeah, that was like one of those random ones that we had on DVD that just used to watch loads, which is like, it's really weird because that's not sort of my sort of film really. Mm. But yeah, I don't know. I guess as well, when you're growing up, you're kind of at the mercy of what your parents bring home for you to watch. And I guess if your parents aren't big fans of Batman and Robin, then you don't end up seeing it, which I guess was my plight. didn't end up seeing it then. Still not seen it all now.
we're just trying to protect you, Steph.
Yeah.
I think any decent parent would use this DVD as a coaster in today's age.
Like, did your brother think this was quite cool as well, or was it just you that kept on rewatching this?
Well, he was born when this was released, so I think he was probably a bit too young for it, to be honest. I can't recall watching it with him. I think me and my sister, who's 2 years younger than me, we went to see this together at the cinema, and I do remember even then I think my dad not liking it, which speaks volumes, doesn't it? Me thinking it was really cool because I was about 7.
Yeah. I think...
Your parents hating it.
That's the thing. I think rewatching it, I did think to myself, maybe the humour was good for that era, but I don't think it can get away with it because I think if a film like Men in Black came out at the same, you know, around the same time, I think that level of humour is still quite somewhat funny today. But I don't think the amount of puns can be justified. It's just...
No.
I guess, like, because, you know, Batman and Robin, it's based on a cartoon. And so if you're kind of taking it from a cartoon, like, the puns are very true to what you would get in a cartoon. And, like, the kind of violence and the, you know, the fight scenes are all very cartoony. It's like, you know, you almost expect that to be the... pow, bang, like, you know, speech bubble things come up. So I guess it stays true to its source material in that respect. But I think that's only going to work for, kids, really. I don't think as adults you're going to kind of enjoy it as much. And I have to admit as well, like, I'm not really into superhero films at all, like, now. No. Like, I don't know, I've seen quite a few of them. But they're not really my sort of film. Not really into DC or Marvel.
No.
But that's just my personal preference.
Well, I'm glad I picked it.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe. Hey, this is a very fair podcast. We let everyone have their turn.
Yeah. Oh, just why couldn't you pick Babe?
If you had to pick a scene that you thought was, you know, like a standout scene, Joe, what would maybe like 8-year-old Joe say versus what 50-year-old Joe would say now?
Well, it's funny, you've mentioned the motorbike scene where they have like a motorbike race, and there's parts of this film, because although I watched this growing up a lot, I hadn't seen it in years, and there were bits that I remember just like the opening scene, like the motorbike scene, and then just bits. So, yeah, the motorbike scene's fantastic. Well, no, 8-year-old Joe would say the motorbike scene is fantastic. It's dated poorly. But the opening scene is the one that it still sticks out for me. You've got, you know, the introduction to the villain, who is just, like, frozen in a museum. And then Batman and Robin come in, breaking, I think, every window in there, fall on the backs, tap their shoes together, ice skates come out, and then they basically take out the villain by playing hockey.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I think 7-8-year-old Max would say that, you know, the motorbike scene was the favourite. I think adult Max would probably say my favourite scene was the dancing monkeys.
Oh my God, can we talk about that? Did you get that far, Steph? Because if you haven't, you're going to think that we're making this up.
I'm just going to nod and smile, which is great for podcasting.
Yeah. So basically, there's a scene where there's a charity auction. What are they auctioning off? Like knights with supermodels?
Yeah, that's the awkward thing. Like it's just a bunch of old men bidding for girls with names of flowers. That's basically what happens.
Yeah. Like, you know, 10 grand to have a date with Lotus Tiger Lily or some whatever it is. And then it's a bit, you know, Gotham is a very seedy place, obviously. And then out of nowhere, everyone's distracted by this sound. And they all turn round, and up on the balcony, there is a big dancing monkey floating about with his hands in the air. And you're like, is this the right film? What is going on? And then Poison Ivy comes out of this gorilla suit.
Yeah.
It's her dancing.
She's like, yeah. Great question.
Is there a reason?
Great question. It's not integral to the plot. It's not like she kind of had to, because if she was going to sneak in, a big fuck off gorilla is the worst thing you can come dressed as, I would argue. There's a few times in this film where she sneaks into places looking how she used to. She like takes her makeup off and she puts the glasses on and like changes her hair and like puts a wig on so that, you know, she's, you know, she can go and talk to Bruce Wayne, all this kind of stuff without him knowing who she really is. But no, for this, she just turns up in a gorilla suit and then proceeds to be Poison Ivy and then seduces people. And yeah,
she wanted to make an entrance, clearly.
That she did. I felt like I was watching George of the Jungle again, honestly. You have to see it to believe
you
it.
You need to see it to believe it, Steph. It's a really unique scene. I do have to say that as bad as many people say the film is, part of the reason why I like DC movies, not that I would class this necessarily as a DC film in that universe, but part of the reason why I like superhero movies is the best bad guys in superhero films, they always have like a really good reason as to why they turned evil. I think part of the reason why Poison Ivy's character doesn't really resonate with me, you know, as a movie lover, it's just because she had an accident and then she turned evil and there's not really any reason behind it. But Mr. Freeze, however, his whole idea is to collect all the diamonds, which doesn't make that much sense, but he's doing all the diamonds in the world. Yes. But he basically is doing it because his wife, his partner, had a very specific syndrome, disease, didn't she? And he's basically frozen her in a state so that he can continue doing research on her. And I quite liked that in the film as a child, but also as a superhero fan, as an adult, I quite liked it just because I think it came together quite nicely at the end. And I have to admit that it did, you know, when he thought that she'd been killed and then Batman kind of gave him almost an olive branch at the end and said, you know, we've got her in a state and we're going to move her to the maximum security prison where you can continue research on her. That was quite a nice ending that you missed out on, Steph. But yeah, that was quite a nice...
I'm sorry, guys. Look, we can record this again next week if you want. I need more time to do the assignment. I'm sorry.
No, that was quite nice. And I think that was like the only part of the film that when that cropped up again, I thought, oh yeah, I remember thinking, yeah, that's really nice sentiment.
Yeah, it's nice to know that it ends in a kind of as bad as this film is, it doesn't just kind of go, it was all a dream. You know, you kind of go, oh, there's some justice there in the character development. And, you know, I think the most fleshed out character is probably Mr. Freeze in this. And it's no surprise because you've got Arnold Schwarzenegger doing all this crazy stuff. He was going to be, apparently, I don't know if this is true, this is a rumour. He was, the character of Mr. Freeze was going to be a lot different. Originally, they were thinking of like a Patrick Stewart kind of Mr. Freeze. And he was going to have all this kind of Shakespearean dialogue. And then apparently it got changed to be what we now know is just, I still see you.
I would have really liked to have heard Arnold Schwarzenegger doing Shakespearean dialogue as Mr. Freeze. I think that would have actually been even better.
Yeah, that would have. It would have been a cult classic. It still would have lost money, but it would have been more of a cult classic.
Yeah. I don't think this film did lose money, though. I think it killed the franchise for a long time. Mm. But I was reading that it did really well when it opened, but people just hated it. People saw it, but people just really did not enjoy the film.
It just made people physically angry. I think that's the...
Which is what you want in a viewing experience. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it did make a lot of money, but it did, like you said said at the beginning, Joe, it did kill the franchise, which is a shame because I remember watching this on video and thinking, oh, you know, there's going to be more movies after this because Alicia Silverstone's character as Batgirl, she was brought in and I thought to myself, oh, this is cool because she was a really cool character, but then it just ended.
Just ended.
I suppose it just ended.
The thing with these superhero films is, I mean, how many Batman films and like... I suppose not just Batman, but how many times have we had, like, a new Batman, a new Spider-Man? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of... Oh, how many origin stories are we going to see for this character and stuff? And at least we got, like, the Christopher Nolan trilogy after this, because that's probably some of the best Batman work. But it's actually weird to think that this kind of... four-part movie thing started with the original Tim Burton one, which was very dark. It was based on like the Dark Knight novels and stuff, and like Steph said, it basically ended up being like the old slapstick like Batman TV show from like the 60s. It's mad. And when you bring in like Robin and Batgirl, where do you go from there, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just thinking about so obviously your last pick, Joe, was Die Another Day.
Yeah.
That was the one we did.
You can see a recurring theme of awful action movies from a specific period of time.
But I was just thinking, like, that James Bond film is quite campy and quite, you know, a lot of puns, a lot of, like, cheesy one-liners. Mm. But then there was a sort of, you know, a 180 to the Daniel Craig James Bond films, so it then went very gritty, very dark. And it's kind of the same with this, like you've got Batman and Robin at its cheesiest peak, and then it does a full sort of switch to Christopher Nolan's like dark, like gritty Batman movies.
Yeah, you're right. I think there was definitely a period in time where all these action films became really over the top, and it kind of spawned things like Austin Powers and stuff. Like I remember when I started watching this film, my girlfriend Lily was with me for the first 5 minutes. That's all she could take, so well done, Steph. And she literally turned to me and said, nah, this is like Austin Powers, not watching this.
At least Austin Powers is a spoof.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's it. Like, at times, when I was watching it with my girlfriend, she kept on turning to me during action scenes or cheesy dialogue and looking at me like, are you being serious? And I was like, it was good for the time, okay, leave it alone. It was good for the time. But I think, you know, if you do your research about films that came out at that time, I don't think it was good for the time.
No,
it wasn't.
Well, it has a 12% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh my god.
Oh wow.
We should have a rule, shouldn't we? Don't go below 30 or something like that. Like, let's say me. I'm the one that keeps suggesting these films.
No, if this film is very nostalgic to you, Joe, that is the whole reason for doing this podcast.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter if they're bad films. If they're nostalgic and they have a good place in your heart,
then we're okay. Yeah, one of the most annoying things actually for me is we talked about how bad like some of Arnold Schwarzenegger's dialogue is, and it's like, but he, you kind of, if you cast him, you expect a certain level of cheese in a way. It's part of the fun of having a film with him in it, like all these really bad puns and catchphrases he has. But the character of Robin for me was, and I remember as a kid being so annoyed by him. He was just like he was really bratty, and the scenes where like they're trapped in this like thing that's going to go to space, about to die, and then he goes "Cowabunga, dude!" and then they just surf off it in the middle of the air.
Yeah.
And yeah, there were just so many things I was like, "You really are a twat."
Which is funny because they were obviously really trying to appeal to like 7-year-old boys.
Yes, they were. You could tell. It was that thing of the time. You had like, you know, like the Dennis the Menace film and Bart Simpson, this kind of stuff that was like really kind of, you know, "Oh, I'm rebellious." It's just really, you know, like very punchable.
Yeah. I think George Clooney didn't do a great job of being Batman in truth. I think if you compared him to like Val Kilmer, I don't think he brought George Clooney to the role, or even just brought like Bruce Wayne's character to the film, if that makes sense. I think Val Kilmer, if you've ever watched any of those Batman films, he's, I would argue, maybe like overly serious. He has quite like a bland face anyway, doesn't he, Val? But he's very, very serious. So George Clooney on screen, he just brings that character. But I guess that's quite hard to do when you've got the Batman outfit on, maybe. But I don't know. He just didn't. It was, I think, if I'm honest, I think he's part of, like he's a massive part of the reason why this didn't work. I think if his character did work, maybe the puns from Mr. Freeze wouldn't seem as bad, or other major characters wouldn't be as bad.
Yeah, he just seems very awkward in this whole film. He'd never really go. He doesn't seem like he really goes with it. Yeah, because Val Kilmer in the previous film is, it's so weird because it's the same director, and you've got like, it's the same Robin, it's the same, you know, Alfred the butler and all this kind of stuff. But the villain is, you got Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey together, which is mad. It's great. And that film was like a surprise hit, and it doesn't seem that different in tone. It just seems like they've really got it wrong with this one in terms of like the over cheesiness, like the over campness of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's a really fine line that they've crossed between Batman Forever and this one.
Yeah. I mean,
such a shame.
At what point was it, Steph, that you flipped your laptop off the table and said, I've had enough of this film?
So in all honesty, I was promising myself that I was going to finish the film. I was watching it quite late at night and I was getting tired, so I decided to stop watching. It was around, I don't even think I was halfway through. It was around the point where Poison Ivy comes in. I'm sorry. And I was like, right, I just need to go to sleep now, and I will pick this up and watch it. And it's been a busy weekend, guys. I'm sorry. I was trying to watch it as close to when we record so that it was fresh in my mind, and that's bit me in the butt. So I promise I will, whatever you recommend next, Joe, I will watch it the whole way through. I promise.
Be the rest of the four Batman films to catch up. Do it reverse order. I think it speaks volumes, Steph, though, that you could only make it that far, because I'm not sure if I hadn't seen this film before, like, and as a kid especially, I'm not sure that I wouldn't have completely trashed my TV either.
I think you have to give credit to the fact that they did try to make a really good action movie. They did on paper.
Do we? Do we?
What? I think, if you pitch this to like big movie honchos on paper, this sounds like it's really, really going to smash it, doesn't it?
Right. So, Max, me and Steph are big movie execs. Pitch me this film.
You pitch
Sell us this film.
Okay. So, Batman, what I want to do is cast George Clooney as Batman.
You're out of your goddamn mind.
Okay. But what about this? Mr. Freeze, I'm going to pitch as Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I like it. Tell me more.
Yeah,
like it.
To be the devil's advocate, let's say they're into that.
Yeah, they're into that. And then at the time, I mean, if you think about the 90s, like Clueless was such a massive film. Alicia Silverstone's profile was big. The guy that played, I feel really bad, the guy that played Robin, whose name I always forget, he was big, in the 90s.
Yeah, in the last Batman film.
In the last Batman film.
Never seen him again.
I just mean that
Chris O'Donnell or something?
Yeah, when celebrities were like, you know, the equivalent of like the royal family in America in the 90s, I mean, you could argue maybe it's similar so now. On paper, those people were just like hits. If you had them in your films, you were going to make loads of money. And I think that's probably what they did. They just thought, oh, you know, we need to re-energize this franchise. What can we do? And they threw money at all these big name actors and it didn't work.
Do you know what though? I think Joe hit the nail on the head, or actually was it Max, which said that George Clooney, he's just awkward in this film. He's just a little bit out of his depth. And I think you need someone that gets what film they're in. Like, I actually think Arnold Schwarzenegger is brilliant in this film. I think he's the perfect campy movie villain. Like, I was cracking up every time he had a line because I just loved it. But I think it falls down when the film is called Batman and Robin and you're like, give me more of Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
I mean, okay, so think about it like this then, Steph. It's 1997. You're the big movie exec and you basically turned down George Clooney being Batman. Who would you pitch as Batman?
Well, do we know why Val Kilmer didn't do this film?
Apparently it was scheduling conflicts with another film that he'd wanted to do, but there's also a thing, apparently he didn't really get on with Arnold Schwarzenegger as well, and they knew that they really wanted Arnold Schwarzenegger in. So there's clashing things on that. Yeah, but also I think Arnold Schwarzenegger, because he got top billing, he got more money, and George Clooney, I've got a feeling that he was on ER and stuff, but he didn't really demand that much money at the time, so he was quite easy to get in. So maybe it was that as well.
Well, what about Michael Keaton? Why didn't he come back and do it?
Yeah, I don't know why he left in the first place, because in the first two films, you've got Tim Burton as the director and Michael Keaton as Batman. And that was like the winning formula. I think Tim Burton, he didn't direct the third one because Joel Schumacher did, but he still produced the third one.
Yeah.
This is the only one without any involvement from Tim Burton, and I think it shows. I'm not sure why he didn't come back. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like we had some pretty solid Batmen. And then I get why in the 90s, you know, George Clooney was kind of the heartthrob, you know, everyone. Yeah, he wasn't a huge, huge household name by that point, but he was still a big star. So I'd get why you'd think, okay, we'll cash in on George Clooney. Bruce Wayne's got, you know, he's got to be a suave kind of, you know, cool guy. Maybe it could work. But I think he needs more edge.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he does. He doesn't seem like the same Batman who, like, has been through, like, his parents dying, and he's really kind of, he just seems a bit too chill. He just seems like George Clooney.
Do you think he knows he was being filmed?
Wait, this isn't a documentary.
Because he was so casual about everything, wasn't he? Maybe
he was Mr. Cool.
Yeah. Maybe
he thought he was Mr. Freeze.
Yeah. They got the scripts mixed up. Hang on.
I mean, what they could have done is maybe asked Brendan Fraser, because he was a hot topic at the time, wasn't he? So,
well, at least he would have got the film he was in.
I would have watched this film then.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you would have made it till the end.
I would. No, that's the thing. I think that's why, like, I mean, obviously very, very different films. George of the Jungle has the same sort of stupid slapstick. It's got monkeys. It's a lot of
comparisons.
Yeah.
There's a lot of comparisons.
There shouldn't be. This is why the film fails, but you can easily compare Fat Man and Robin to George of the Jungle and Casper.
I think if Brendan Rodgers was in...
Brendan who?
Did I say Brendan Rodgers? Was it? No, he was in Batman and Robert.
I was going to say if Brendan Fraser was in it, that monkey scene would have made more sense. I have to say, Joe, it was a good movie recommendation. It really was.
I thought you were going to say it was a good movie.
No.
Jesus.
No.
No. It's definitely a nostalgic film that we grew up with and still able to watch. It's no, but you know.
Did you cry at the end of this one?
No. That's saved for films like Cool Runnings.
Yeah.
That gets me every time.
And Dragonheart. Yeah.
Yeah, Dragonheart, yeah.
I can't believe that's the one film that we've done that you've cried at.
So we wouldn't recommend this to friends, no. Well, friends we wanted to keep.
I think if I had some friends round and we had some wine and we wanted to watch a film that was really easy to watch, really easy to laugh at, I would recommend this one with a couple of glasses of wine.
Yeah, I think if anyone has seen the latest Cats film, I think you have to be in the same mood you'd want to see that in. Like, probably about to open the third bottle of wine and there really is nothing on and you're still in lockdown, so what else is there left?
Yeah, I mean, just on that, I've tried to watch that film twice. I haven't stopped because it's bad. It's just not hooked me. But I have heard everything about it. I have heard why it's so bad and, yeah. But I do need to watch that film.
It is shocking to both Cats fans and film, you know, fans of any film genre. It's just shocking.
Is it?
Yeah. Maybe someone will make a podcast about those kind of films in like 30 years.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll be dead.
I don't know where Joe's going to go next with his film recommendation. I can't predict these anymore.
It's getting really weird, isn't it?
I'm quite excited for the next one.
So who is the next one? Is it me?
It's you, Max.
Yeah, it's you. It's you choosing. Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
Well, at least you know it can't get any worse.
Let's see. What have you got for us, Max?
So I have, for the next episode, I have two films, and I was trying to figure out which one both of you had seen. And I think I'm just going to go with the one that I enjoyed the most when I was a kid. So for the next episode, I'm going to recommend that we watch Fly Away Home.
Oh,
ooh,
cute.
I've not seen this.
I've definitely seen this film.
It's a film that... So I'm a middle child, and a lot of the films that I watched were governed by my older sister. And Lauren absolutely loved the soundtrack. She loved the concept, everything about that film. So... yeah. I'll be interested to see what your view of it is, Joe, if you've never seen it before.
I don't even know, like, you know when you someone says, oh, the film title, and you go, oh, yeah, you can picture, like, the film poster. I know nothing about what, is it about planes? What's it about?
It's, yeah.
Don't tell him, Max, just let him watch it.
Don't read anything about it, just going cold on what watch okay. It, definitely.
Will do. Hopefully I'll make it to the end of the film.
I'm sorry. Oh, put me to shame. I feel like when you're in school and you've not done your homework and you're trying to blag it.
Yeah, Joe's the teacher's pet at the front of the class pointing to Steph.
Sir, Steph didn't see the whole film. Well, thanks for listening, those of you that are listening, and lovely to speak to you all again.
Yep.
I feel like I have to apologise one last time for recommending this film. But I'm sure there's going to be a few people that saw this as a kid and go, oh yeah, okay. I get why he picked it, hopefully.
I don't think they will. But that's a nice try. But no, yeah. I you know, don't let this review of the film put you off. It's worth it. Check it out. It's decent. Definitely.
Lovely. Okay then.
You've just gone back on everything you've just said.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay then, folks.
Okay.
Stay cool. I think there's only one way to end this particular podcast, and everyone has to say their favourite Arnold Schwarzenegger line from the film before we sign off.
Oh God, I think I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember it properly, but when he's like, "What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age." That was such a bad impression. Oh.
That was also my favourite line, but I think it's just because it was just so bad. I think in that scene alone, he managed to fit like 5 puns into the space of like 2 minutes. But yeah, that has to be the best line of the film, maybe of the franchise as well.
Definitely, yeah. I think it doesn't get any better than that.
It doesn't.
Thank you for listening to the 90s Kids Movie Pod. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you like what you heard, we'd love for you to rate, review and subscribe. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 90s Kids Movie Pod and let us know which films you grew up watching. Goodbye.